What are you doing? I'll tell you what you're doing. You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Either you are, or I'll be skipping rope with your entrails. Ta-ta.
This is the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, your source for lore and so much more. Adventurers, welcome back to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. This is Tom and Lotus. We are here as usual, and we are continuing through our exploration of the documents that help define what the creation stories are for the different races, different groups of people throughout Tamriel. And Lotus, we talked about the Altmer, we talked about the Imperials, but I figured it's time to start getting a little bit weird, because those are kind of the more common ones.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's time to talk about some kitty cats.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's get slightly weirder.
slightly weirder. This one wants to talk about the gods in the sky and the ground and the other places. You know, the gods, the power. He's just going to let me keep going.
I'm just going to let you climb up the lattice all by yourself.
Oh, man. Oh, it's so funny because you know how little kittens like to climb up things like lattices or screens?
I know. That's what I mean. Like, there's so many subtle things as well,
right?
Which I find very entertaining.
I'm sure some people are like, "What are you even talking? Lunar lattice? What? Don't worry, we will get there.
We'll get there.
We're getting into this, in order to help explain what's going on with the Khajiit creation story and how they view the gods and all of that. Just like the previous two creation episodes we did recently, we're going directly to the source. This is not like so many other lore shows do, where they try to explain the lore from a objective, this is what the things are, and then they get into speculation areas and territory. And Lotus, this is one of the things I've been doing in researching this. I've been looking through like posts on Reddit from like even just a number of years ago to most recently, and people ask questions like, what YouTuber, what podcast should I go to check out information about the lore? And one of the complaints I hear over and over again is I have a hard time understanding when they're going from what is the objective truth to what they're speculating about what things mean. And too many people spend time on speculating, right? And I wanted to address this right at the beginning of the show, because from the perspective of somebody who is trying to understand the lore and explain it to other people, the reason why there's so much speculation is because it is not clear cut at all.
That's kind of the thing that we've been trying to stress,
right? Absolutely.
It's hard to be like, here are the objective truths, because the series is designed around not having objective truths,
right? And one thing that you should be aware of is if you are going to a podcast or a YouTube page or whatever, a video, any of that stuff, and someone says this is definitively the way it is from an in-universe perspective, nobody actually knows. We're not, unless it's the people who write the series, we can try to piece the stuff together, but we don't really know. And that's part of why we are going directly back to the source material. And so in religious studies, this would be called exegeting the text rather than eisegeting. Exegeting is let's read the text and see what the text is telling us, rather than let's just take what we want to be true and kind of deposit it into the text, right?
Well, and opposites. The other thing kind of in that regard is you had mentioned, like, unless you are one of the, you know, people who I like to always refer to it as like own the IP. If you're working on it, it is their story to tell how they're going to tell it. Right. And then we all have our headcanon that we like to work with, which is great and tons of fun. But the thing is, with this series, all the time they have interactions and stuff like that, even the developers like to play with the idea of things being nebulous. Yeah. Well, I don't know what's true.
Yeah.
So if any of them answered things concretely, I feel like that would even be weird, because like even out of universe, they like to play coy.
Right, right. What is true? Well, according to who? According to when? According to, all of that is important. So here, mm-hmm. let's dive in. We are going back to another one of those foundational documents that shows up and has been in the series since Morrowind. This one is written by Douglas Goodall. So this is not a Kirkbride written document, but it's just as weird and fun because you can clearly tell these people were working together on these games as they went through them in the lore. This one is called Words of Clan Mother Anisi to Her Favored Daughter, by Clan Mother Anisi, How a Khajiit Explains the Origin of the World. This is such a wonderful text. And just like the others, I'm going to go read through. We'll take some pauses. We'll try to explain what it seems like this is trying to tell us from different perspectives. And Lotus and I will break this down. But keep in mind, this is from a clan mother. Clan mothers have a very specific role among the Khajiit. In fact, anything that would be important to, say, cats or kittens in our own world takes a certain role. Think about it. Like, if you have a bunch of baby kittens, they're all going to go to their mother. The mother is a very important figure in their lives. Therefore, the clan mother here is describing the creation of the world in the way that a wise mother would understand these things, and in the way that those things would have been passed down from generation to generation, right? So
exactly.
Yeah. So let's get into it. Anisi tells you, you are no longer a mewing kitten and you have learned to keep secrets from Anisi. And so Anisi tells you, first pause there. She's not upset that her daughter is old enough to learn how to keep secrets. It just means that, oh, she's mature. This is time right. to tell you things, right? Because keeping secrets is a core component of being a good Khajiit. So right off the bat, and there will be more of this.
Again, without it being like stereotypical in some aspects, it's funny, but like to that aspect, the right out the gate, the idea of a sneakiness factor becomes part of who they are.
Right, right. And it's foundational. And they're like that for a reason, which this document will explain. So let's keep going. In the beginning, there were two litter mates, Anur and Fadumai. So Anu, Padume, that sounds a lot like the ones that we've already heard from the two other creation stories with just slightly different names. They sound a little bit more like the way cats would pronounce them, right?
Yep, which is going to be a theme you'll notice.
Absolutely, and the names are awesome. So let's keep going. After many phases, cycles, kelpas?
Moon phases? Moon like you're going to see a lot of weird parallels to this.
Something like that, but the moons haven't been created yet, so I'm guessing kelp is here.
Right, but I was going to say the idea of phases becomes very, very important to this whole culture.
Right, right. So Fadumai, who is Padume, who represents chaos, and Anu represents order, or Anur represents order here. So chaos says to order, let us wed and make children to share our happiness. Notice it's Fatime's idea in this version of the story. And they gave birth to Alkosh, the first cat. And Anur said, Alkosh, we give you time for what is as fast as slow or as slow as a cat. I love that. So Alkosh clearly is...
Akatosh.
Yeah, I'm going to let Lotus fill in these.
So we have Akatosh now. But in this culture, it is Alkosh.
Right.
Again, a lot of these names are going to be very similar. You can probably piece them together yourself, but we will try to clarify it too, because again, depending upon your experience level with the series, it might not immediately be apparent.
Right. And some of them are a little bit more changed than others. So for example,
they
start with Akatosh. Akatosh is the first one because you need the first god of time to establish order with which the other ones then can come after. So it's kind of inherently important to do time first, right? So then they gave birth to Kanarthi. What does Kanarthi sound like?
So I was going to say, this is where we have our wind god and we have Kine, which is probably going to be the easiest one for people to make the connection to. Again, there's a bunch of variants, but
Kinnereth
compared to Kine.
Kine, Kinnereth, right, Kanarthi.
Kanarthi, Kinnereth, that's right. Yep, it's like all similar in their own way, but again, it's the Khajiiti twist.
Yep. So for Kanarthi, the winds. Kanarthi, to you we give the sky, and what can fly higher than the wind? And then they gave birth to Magris, the cat's eye. Magris, to you we give the sun, for what is brighter than the eye of a cat? Now notice Magris, Magnus. In this version, Magnus doesn't retreat and create the sun. The sun is just part of who Magris is.
It's their domain. Essentially is the sun.
right. And then they give birth to Mara, the mother cat. Mara, you are love, for what is more loving than a mother? Right? The whole parental thing being written and described from a mother to a daughter. So that all makes sense there.
Yep.
And then we have, then they gave birth to Srendar. I love it.
I love these names.
So Srendar is the runt. So Stendar, right? Srendar, we give you mercy. How does a runt survive except by mercy? Because you're the runt god.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're the, You got the short stick, literally.
Right. All right. So, okay. And many phases passed, and Anur and Fatemai were happy. And Anur said, we should have more children to share our happiness. Notice this is now Anur's idea to do this again, not Fatemai's idea to do this. So it's coming from the opposite side, from order rather than chaos. But notice that the ones that Fatemai gave birth to initially, when it was Fatemai's idea, were Aedra. Even though they came from the idea of chaos, these are coming from the idea of order, Anur or Anu, and yet this is what's about to happen. We should have more children to share our happiness. And Fatemai agreed, and she gave birth to Hemora, and she gave birth to Hircine, and she gave birth to Meruns, and Mephala with an F, and Sangin, and Shigareth, and many others. Notice these are the Daedric princes, right? This is Hermora, Hermaeus Mora, right?
Yeah.
Hircine, Meruns Dagon, Mephala, Sanguin, Sheogorath. Notice it's not, it's Sheogorath specifically. It's not Jigalag.
Right.
There's no mention of Jigalag here. It's just Sheogorath. Yeah. Lotus, did you want to add something?
No, it's just, it's interesting to that point where it's just like, again, they specifically like are avoiding, like, this is not the full pantheon that we are used to.
No, it's just
pared down quite a bit, actually.
Right. And notice, go ahead. Keep going.
Go ahead.
I was going to point out that notice that not only are they grouped separately, the first group was Aedra, the second group are Daedric princes, but it's just kind of a smattering of both. And other than them being listed at different times and having different idea of whose idea it was to then progenerate more, they're all kind of on this on par. They're not. They're all just children of Anur and Fatemai.
Right. Exactly. And yeah, it's just interesting because some of them are not ones that you would typically have as. It's kind of a weird way to put this, but some of the Daedric princes are quote unquote newer to the series. Like Hircine was not one of the original, like one of the more original ones. He kind of like came about later in the series, not much later, but like some of the ones that are referred to as kind of like the older ones, they seem much more of a staple to all groups, don't necessarily fit the bill for the Khajiit, which I think is interesting.
Yeah. So they do say that there are more, but they're only pointing out specific ones.
They're only picking, exactly. Yeah. Yep, nope, yeah. They're just kind of picking the specifics at the moment.
Right, and then Fatemai said, and Fatemai is the one who gets to define who all of these are. She gets to name these, and I believe she named the first group as well, if I look back. Fatemai said to her, yes, and they gave birth to so-and-so, and Anur said, Alkash, I give you time. So there's a switch here. Fatemai wants to have children first, comes up with the idea, but then Anur is the one who names them and defines them, and it's flipped here for the Daedra. So there is a little bit more of that correlation traditionally to the Daedric princes being Padmaic and the Aedra being Anuic, although the similarities come and go with that, and sometimes there are direct things that are in very stark contrast to that idea. So it's just worth pointing that out because it's not as clean cut as you might assume. So Fatemai said, Hermora, you are the tides, for who can say whether the moon predicts the tides or the tides predicts the moons, right? Like the forbidden knowledge, did the forbidden knowledge help make things happen because somebody knew the way things were happening, or did things happen and therefore created the knowledge? There's this like,
right. And with Hermaeus Mora, specifically with this tides reference, one of the big things with Hermaeus Mora, it's one of the descriptions that I always loved about one of his powers is scribing the being able to scribe the tides of fate.
Yeah.
So this is one of these situations. It's like, okay, well, if you're going on the idea of fate being related to these tides, so to speak, it's like, well, he's sifting through. Okay, well, are you basically following the tides of these fate lines, like because you're destined to do it, or are you doing it so as a result he sees where you're going with it type of deal? It's chicken or the egg.
Yeah, chicken and egg thing. Like, does that information then skew the way things have to work? Or, and usually he says that he uses other people because he himself cannot change the fate of things. It's like mortals he can.
Yes, but he can just see it.
Right, but that means that he's still conveying information, which would change the way things would happen, right?
Which would modify things, and then it's like, well, okay, but if I put something into play because of knowledge I have, then you're modifying the thing to be... It gets real weird.
So the chicken is the egg, but the egg is it goes back and forth, right? It's weird.
Yeah, it gets weird.
So the next one's fun. Hercine, you are the hungry cat. I love this. For what hunts better than a cat with an empty belly? Meruns, you are the Jakajit, for what is more destructive than a kitten? Mafala, you are the clan mother, for what is more secretive than the ways of the clan mothers? The clan mothers are especially secretive, but remember, that's a good thing. Sangin.
Yeah, no, that's a selling point in their culture. Being secretive, being able to keep secrets,
yes.
These ideas of a stealthiness is a selling point. It's not a slight.
Right, right. And even historically in like human societies, oftentimes the matriarchs were the ones who leveraged their power through secrecy and information because they didn't have in traditional society the same types of roles that the patriarchs would. The patriarchs could be more forward with things, but oftentimes the women were the ones who were kind of pulling the strings behind the scenes. Yeah. And that was through the use of information and secrecy and those kinds of things. So it makes sense. Sangin, you are the blood cat, for who can control the urges of blood? Shigaroth, you are the skooma cat, for what is crazier than a cat on skooma?
I just love just like less on the... I just enjoy the fact that it's like, yes, okay, it's got the wackiness factor, and definitely when it comes to the skooma cat in general, because I actually want to reference it more, like Shigaroth, the skooma cat, like it's such a aspect of the wackiness factor, whereas we've gone over it here, I've gone over it on my other show, actually recently we were just having a deep dive on it, where Shigaroth is not all goofy, wacky, cheese.
Oh no! Yeah,
the mental struggles he actually embodies is really, really disturbing.
It's very dark,
and that is not seen nearly as much, at least with the Khajiit pantheon. It's definitely more the zany, like ho ho, I have way too much at this party with Sangin, and now look how ridiculous I am. Yeah, type of deal.
Don't hang out with Sangin and Shigaroth because they will get you drunk on skooma. All right, so then it goes on and says, and Anur said, two litters is enough, for too many children will steal our happiness. But Kanarthi went to Fatime and said, Fatime, mother, Kanarthi grows lonely, so high above the world, where not even my brother Alkosh can fly. Fatime took pity on her and tricked Anur to make her pregnant again. So, more babies on the way.
Yeah, surprise.
Surprise. And Fatime gave birth to the moons and their motions. This is interesting. And she gave birth to Nirni, the majestic sands and lush forests. And she gave birth to Azura, the dusk and the dawn. Notice the order of these things. The moons... And then the thing that the moon goes around, Nirn, like the planet that everybody lives on, if it even is a planet, it may just be a big flat object from
right.
As far as we know, we don't really know. And then the majestic sands and lush forests, those are the kinds of places that Khajiit prefer to live. So that's how they represent Nirn, the place where they live. And then she gave birth to Azura, the dusk and the dawn, because you can't have a dusk and a dawn without a world to live on. That has
and a moon
dust,
cycle and a moon slash cycle. Sun cycle.
Right.
But it's funny because in the, like you were talking about, in the order of things, it's interesting because Azura is like, in terms of this, much younger than some of the previous litters because it just of the way it aligns. And normally you think of Azura being kind of around since the beginning with the other Daedra, and it's not so much the case in this one.
Yeah, and the order, this is another one of those things that you learn when you read through a lot of these ancient kinds of myths in our own world and in contexts like this, is that the order sometimes is important. Sometimes it's about who was the firstborn, who was the secondborn, and the power goes down from there.
Right,
sometimes
right.
The order is important because they're trying to fit everything in from the way that they understand them now and then reason backwards. So the idea that like Azura might be extremely powerful and important, but how do you have a dusk and a dawn if you don't have Nirn yet? So therefore,
exactly.
She must have come after that, but that doesn't necessarily mean she's less powerful.
Exactly. Or, you know, without the moon, Zen, sun in order to make a dusk and dawn.
Right. So like, and you can see this in real world religions too, where people kind of backwards engineer the process because, well, this requires this thing to have been there. So that thing must have showed up first, that kind of mm-hmm. thing. And sometimes they'll do it both ways. It'll actually get even more confusing and it doesn't always make sense. But that's just, you have to, my point is you have to be careful about the things you assume about, say, power or importance when it comes to ordering.
Exactly. It's just more so the order, not necessarily the power related to it.
Yeah, but sometimes it very much is the power, and usually that gets reinforced with labels like firstborn and those kinds of things.
Right, and it's a big thing with vampires. The older vampires tend to be, the stronger they are. It's like more pure bloodline. A different situation.
Right, or like titans and then the gods in the Greek pantheon. Mm-hmm. Like they tend to descend in power, but then Zeus finds a way to mess that up, but that's a whole other thing. Anyway, let's keep going. And from the beginning, Nerni and Azura fought for their mother's love. Notice that they're kind of two separate things. It's not Kinnereth, the winds. It's Azura representing the kind of the realm above. It's almost like the separation of like the sky and the earth, and that one represents one represents the other. And that's a very traditional kind of religious perspective on this kind of thing.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. Anur caught Fatemai while she was still birthing, and he was angry. Anur struck Fatemai, and she fled to birth the last of her litter far away in the great darkness. This is interesting, too. Notice the aggressor here is Anur. Anu is being a jerk, attacks her, strikes her, and she goes off to the darkness to seek safety and be alone. It's not that Padume comes from the darkness. It's that there is a darkness out there and Padume retreats to it because of out of necessity.
Again, kind of lending credence in a lot of ways to the idea of being able to blend into the shadows being like a skill amongst Khajiit.
Amongst Khajiit, right, the connection to that. But also, it also implies that the darkness was another component that was primordial. This is something else that gets pointed
to. Just kind of there.
Like, even though everything seems to be like Anu and Padme, and they kind of blend together and create their children or whatever, there's this other thing out there. It's just called the darkness, the void. Maybe that isn't even associated with the two of them fundamentally. Maybe Fatemai had to retreat to the darkness. This is similar in The Lord of the Rings, where Eru Iluvatar is the primary god that creates everything underneath him. But then you get further into the lore and you come across creatures that came from the darkness, and Melkor, the evil god, goes out into the darkness to try to seek power and comes back empty-handed. The darkness was there. The darkness was not something that was created by the gods. It was just already there among the most powerful. So, and it's kind of mixing lore here, but this is similar in that way. So Fatime's children heard what had happened, and they all came to be with her and protect her from Anur's anger. So they all grouped together and protect her from Anu, right? That's very different in this story. That we don't see
very
any
much
of
so.
That. Yeah, in the other ones. And Fatemai gave birth to Lorkaj while she's out in the darkness, the last of her litter in the great darkness. And the heart of Lorkaj was filled with the great darkness. And when he was born, the great darkness knew its name, and it was Namira. This is really cool. If you haven't heard us talk about Namira, and go back and listen to that episode, the connection to the void and darkness and all of that, and how she is different from the other Daedric princes, that is a piece of this. And of course, Lorkaj, how does Lorkaj work into this?
Lorkaj becomes this whole, again, parallels are there to so many things, but Lorkaj is like a very, very interesting aspect, especially because it's so strongly linked to Namira, and you've got, you know, Lorkhan. Like, this is just
Lorkhan or Shore or
just like Shore. Yeah, sure.
Right? Lorkhan.
Sure. Sorry.
Right.
Which is, you know, interesting as the final of the litter and this strong tie to the darkness in this one, as, you know, it's it's the black sheep, black cat, I guess, in the scenario where it's just like doesn't really match the others at the moment.
Yeah. And notice that Lorkhaj is the last of the litter, but then Lorkhaj's, the darkness inside Lorkhaj's heart creates Nymeera. Nymeera is not originally part of the litter. She is different from the others.
She's unique.
Right, right. So it goes on. It gets even weirder. And Fatemeh knew her time was near. Fatemeh said, Jacques Hage, to you, Fatemeh gives the lattice for what is steadier than the phases of the moon. Your eternal motions will protect us from Honor's anger, and the moon's left to take their place in the heavens. And Honor growled and shook the great darkness, but he could not cross the lattice. The Khajiit stuff in Elder Scrolls Online talks a lot about this lunar lattice. This, when you think about cats, we joked about at the beginning, but this idea that like kittens will climb up a screen or a lattice. Mm-hmm. When you think of the word lattice, think of like woodworking where like you have a cross section in order to
create, I was
like,
about
a
to
fence.
Say it's or, one of those things which we are actually just putting on the deck at my house because we have so many bunnies kind of running under to try to build nests under my deck.
We have to put up a lattice.
Doesn't let them through.
Right.
That's what you can picture. That sort of hex pattern pieces of wood. And it's basically a way to prevent entry, which is exactly what it's doing in this scenario, except lunar wise.
Right. It's like the moons are a piece of this, and there's there's actually a third moon eventually we'll get to, but the moons are a piece of this, and it keeps Nirn safe and removed from Anur, from Anu.
Right. And his apparent uncontrollable rage.
Yep. Yep. So totally different than some of the other lore. So let's continue on to the next part. And Fatemeh said, Nirni, to you, Fatemeh leaves her greatest gift. She will give birth to many people as Fatemeh gave birth today. When Nirni saw that Azura had nothing, Nirni left smiling. So Nirn is given the gift of being able to birth children, mortals, creatures, things, animals and plants, things that live on Nirn.
Create life pretty much just in general.
But Azura is not given that ability at all, is left out in the cold.
Yep.
So we know who Fatemeh's favorite is here.
I was going to say, not even subtle about playing favorites in this situation.
Yep. Yep. And that seems to create an issue with Azura, right? Like, because we've talked about Azura a lot, this idea of like, maybe she's not as good as she seems.
Yeah. She, again, because the lingering situation of the Daedric Princes can only appear so good, but they're all pretty self-righteous for whatever their end goals are, and her desire to be loved isn't so much, it doesn't seem altruistic so much as like obsessive, like I need you to love me, as opposed to just like, oh no, I want to make people happy. It's like, no, I need you to love me. That's very different.
Yeah. Kind of like a spurned child who doesn't feel they were treated fairly, mm-hmm. trying to make up for the things that were lacking and trying to get the things that they believed that they were due. Yep. It goes on. And all Fatemeh's children left except Azura. And Fatemeh said, to you, my favored daughter, Fatemeh leaves her greatest gift. To you, Fatemeh leaves her secrets. And Fatemeh told her favorite daughter three things. So Azura gets something, but not the same kind of thing as everyone else. And Fatemeh said, when Nirni is filled with her children, take one of them and change them. Make the fastest, cleverest, most beautiful people and call them Khajiit. So she gives to Azura the job of changing one of the mortal groups into cat people. That's where they come from.
That their creation story. This is where you really see, like, for lack of a better word, the propaganda side to it, where it's like, okay, and then you make the best people, which is obviously us.
Obviously us. We're the best ones. Yeah. And it goes and it keeps going. And Fatemeh said, the Khajiit must be the best climbers, for if Massar and Secunda, the moons, fail, they hold up the lunar lattice, they must climb Canarthi's breath, the wind, to set the moons back in their courses. This plays into the events of ESO when we do the whole Khajiit stuff and that expansion. And Fatemeh said, the Khajiit must be the best deceivers. Remember the whole being secret thing? For they must always hide their nature from the children of Anur. So there is a difference between these groups. And you and I have talked about this before when we talked about Khajiit, how there's this kind of hidden purpose that they all believe they have, but everyone else underestimates them. Oh, they're just thieves. Oh, they're not that smart. Whatever.
Right. Whereas these are considered more seedy traits to a lot of the other cultures, where they're not in this culture. They're selling points. And others, you know, again, it's like, oh, well, you're good at thievery. That great, you're a thief. Whereas them, it's like, okay, well, no, you're talented. You're quick. You can get what you need. Like, mm-hmm. It's just a totally different spin on the exact same thing.
Yeah. And here, by the way, and because you are like this, you have a very important responsibility.
Right.
You need exactly. to make sure that Massar and Secunda don't fail. And if they do, you need to go back up there and put them on their courses yeah. because they
fix this, because everything's doomed.
Everything will be doomed. Anur will show up and destroy everything and everything will be done, right? It's another one of those reasons why the world could possibly end, and we have, you know, them to thank for holding back that threat, right. which is kind of cool. So if you're already into Khajiit, you should be like, oh no, that's actually really, really cool. Because if that's true, that makes them awesome. They're secretive for a very good reason.
Right.
And then it goes on and says, and Fatime said, the Khajiit must be the best survivors, for Nerni will be jealous and she will make the sands harsh and the forests unforgiving. And the Khajiit will always be hungry and at war with Nerni. So there will always be like a thing where they don't quite fit in with the land that they live in.
Yeah, it's just a permanent conflict.
Right. And with these words, Fatime died after many phases. Just dead. That was my last dying words.
It's just like, and there's my final speech dramatically. It's like, all right.
And the black beast.
At least you got
of,
to finish that statement first.
Yeah. Yeah. We wouldn't have written, Yeah. So after many phases, Nerni came to Lorkhaj and said, and this is Nerni and Lorkhaj, different group having this conversation. Lorkhaj, Fatime told me to give birth to many children, but there is no place for them. And Lorkhaj said, Lorkhaj makes a place for children, and Lorkhaj puts you there so you can give birth. Notice Lorkhaj speaks like a Khajiit by saying yeah. his own name.
Yes.
So basically, okay, you are Nern, but it isn't really set up for children. So I'm going to do my thing to help Nern actually be a place that has stuff that will make having children work. But the heart of Lorkhaj was filled with the great darkness, because that's where he came from when he was birthed. And Lorkhaj tricked his siblings so that they were forced into his new place with Nerni. Notice it says tricked here. It doesn't say subtly or secreted or whatever.
Yeah, no, just straight up tricked.
Right, straight up tricked. And many of Fatime's children escaped and became the stars. And many of Fatime's children died to make Nerni's path stable. And the survivors stayed and punished Lorkhaj. This is interesting, right? The stars don't come from them retreating with Magnus. They come
right,
from this idea.
Holes. It's like
right.
very different here.
Yeah, it comes from this idea that like, oh, they were tricked and the stars left, but the sun didn't leave. This doesn't mean Magnus, but it could mean Magnus. It may not just point out his name specifically, but
right.
it may be referring to Magnus and these others. But it doesn't say sun, doesn't say Magnus, so just be aware of that. And then the survivors stayed and punished Lorkhaj, the Aedra who were left, like Akatosh punishing Lorkhaj. That's similar to the other lore. The children of Fatime tore out the heart of Lorkhaj. Now, notice the children of Fatime at this point are Aedra and Daedric princes. So
right.
were they in on this together? And hid it deep within Nerni. And they said, we curse you, noisy Lorkhaj, to walk Nerni for many phases. Phases again.
We're
that
back
same
to phases.
Word is, are these Kelpas? Is that what's going on here? Maybe. But Nerni soon forgave Lorkhaj, for Nerni could make children, and she filled herself with children, but cried because her favorite children, the forest people, did not know their shape. This is where things start to connect to Bosmer lore.
Right. And when we get into Bosmer stuff, where the Bosmer in their primordial state, it's known as the ooze, where they literally don't have a shape. They're just a big pile of goop.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that, again, that gets into all sorts of weird stuff like the Wild Hunt and whatever, which we will get into later. But yeah, there's a strong connection here now to the Bosmer, which is interesting because a lot of times throughout the series, they're at war with the Bosmer.
Yeah, yeah, and it gets even deeper. It goes on. It says, but Nerni soon forgave Lorkhaj, right? Because the yep. blah, 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 blah. I just read that. And Azura came to her and said, poor Nerni. This is Azura again. Remember, Nerni and Azura were in conflict with each other. Poor Nerni, stop your tears. Azura makes for you a gift of a new people. Nerni stopped weeping, and Azura spoke the first secret to the moons, and they parted and let Azura pass. So the lattice didn't hold Azura back. She got through. And Azura took some forest people who were torn between man and beast, and she placed them in the best deserts and forests on Nerni. And Azura, in her wisdom, made them of many shapes, one for every purpose. And Azura named them Khajiit and told them her second secret and taught them the value of secrets, right? The being secretive and what their role is. And Azura bound the new Khajiit to the lunar lattice as if as is proper for Nerni's secret defenders. Then Azuri spoke the third secret, and the moons shone down on the marshes, and their light became sugar. It's so good.
Yay.
All right. So Nerni and Azura make up, and she comes down and does what her mom said. It takes a specific group of them from the forest who weren't quite man and weren't quite beast, and made them into this new people, the Khajiit, and then told them their job, told them their connection to the moon. And then it even talks about how they're turned into their many different shapes, right? All the different fur stocks.
Right.
So
the other thing that I find fascinating about this, and this is one of these parts of the series that's a little bit lost to time. So, you know, just I think a fun little side note, when Khajiit were originally part of the series and introduced, they weren't just cat people in Arena. That was the thing. They were basically kind of just people that had tattoos that made them look like cats.
Right, right.
And I like how this is almost like this is what it's alluding to, is that connection where it's just like, well, we took these people and, you know, we made them into Khajiit. And that weird little tidbit from Arena almost is like that bridge of them. Well, okay, you were kind of forest people and you end up as cat people. So we're going to have this little like intermediate step of like, oh, originally when the series formed, I mean, it's older lore that's just kind of like, you know, they've made them much more involved as a group. Mm-hmm. But it's just kind of funny that that sort of almost ties into this, like, well, they were forest people that maybe were just tattooed and then kind of became cat people over time. It's like, mm-hmm. I just mm-hmm. kind of like how it's almost like a nod that it's like, yeah, this was a thing we used to actually have as part of the series. It's not really important anymore.
Yeah. And then they justify it with all the different fur stocks, which they finally really fleshed out. Clearly this
in ESO,
this
yeah,
concept came from Morrowind. This is a 25-year-old right. concept. This is the third game in the series, and they really started to flesh this out in the lore here. And then in the Elsewhere DLC for ESO, if you go visit Elsewhere, you will find all of the different fur stocks. You will find there's a like the ones in the middle are, you know, they walk on two legs. They're like mannish in height for like several tiers of them are, you know, taller or shorter, but they all kind of walk on two legs. There's the kind that can't wear mannish shoes. I'm putting this in quotes because they have they have more like cat feet, which you see in Morrowind.
In Morrowind.
And then you have the really big ones and the really little ones.
The huge ones that are like battle cats. You can ride into battle and bring us down to little house cats.
Right. And even some of them look more like humans with more just cat ears, and some of them look more like cats and walk on all four legs. And so you have this whole entire spectrum, which fills in the gaps across the entire series, which kind of retcons this stuff. But
for sure.
But for people, like, I remember when the Elsewhere DLC came out and people were like, oh, well, now they're retconning this other stuff in. And yeah, it's cool. There's been references to this stuff, but they really are adding a lot of stuff here. It's like, no, it goes all the way back to this document from Morrowind. It talks about how they're all in these different shapes with different purposes.
And they filled them out, like, in a lot of ways. And the only real thing I can lend credence to is some of the interpretations are a little... But again, this is the problem with writing tends to embellish for interest. So, like, some of these things where some of the documents throughout the series have been like, oh, you know, they were riding these battle cats into battle and it's 12 feet tall. And then, you know, in game, it's like, well, the thing's like 7 feet tall. Like, I wouldn't really consider it a building. It's more of like, like a mount you would ride.
Right.
So it's like, was that retconned or was that another scenario where it's like, well, the author who has a giant saber cat running at them that another cat is possibly riding probably just like freaking out, like, oh my god, this thing's huge, it's the size of a house. But it's like, sure,
and a story sounds more fun if you embellish it a little bit,
right? You know? And it's like, we all know that eyewitness accounts are one of the least valuable forms of information. So
yeah,
like, somebody panicking in battle is probably not going to be super accurate,
right? And especially battle reports from history, like where right. people in the past will say, oh, they had 100,000 soldiers, and then the historians go back and they're like, eh, they had no more than maybe 15,000. Like,
right.
Like, if you actually look at the results of the battle and what was left over, and the,
exactly. So that's another fun little thing that I think parallels real life accounts of things. Right. Even if it is a bit less spectacular, because it would be kind of cool having like 12-foot battle cats charging it around and stuff like that. That'd be fun.
That would be cool. That would be cool. All right, we're getting close to the end here. This ends with a reference to the Bosmer, the wood elves. It says, but Ifrey. Right, Ifer is what they call him, or Ifer. I always like to call it Ifer.
Ifer.
Ifer. That's a good one. Heard the first secret and snuck in behind Azura. So Ifrey sneaks in. Ifrey is not mentioned among the other pantheons.
Nope, just kind of here now.
At all. And also was not mentioned in this document before this.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's my favorite part. It's just like no reference to Ifrey or Ifer, however you want to joke about the name, but Ifrey, until all of a sudden it's now, it's like, oh, by the way, here's Ifrey. Okay.
Just following Azura in, just sneaking through the door. And Ifer could not appreciate secrets. And he told Nerni of Azura's trick. So Nerni made the deserts hot and the sands biting. And was like, oh, yeah, Azura isn't telling me everything. Fatima isn't telling me everything.
So now I'm going to punish your people because...
Mm-hmm. And Nerni made, and Nerni made the forests wet and filled with poisons. And Nerni thanked... Ifer and let him change the forest people also. And Ifer did not have Azura's subtle wisdom. So Ifer made the forest people elves, always and never beasts. So just like Azura comes in and goes, okay, these are your select beasts. This is Fatimai's select people. We're going to make them Khajiit. They're going to be awesome. The other people who tend to live in the forests nearby the Khajiit, who the Khajiit don't like so much, don't always get along with, well, they're going to be the crappiest people because Ifer snuck in and did this terrible thing and turned them into elves.
Which I also think is interesting because it's noted that they should be like never beasts.
Yes.
Which is basically, which we will get into more when we deal with Bosmer, that is essentially a giant sacrifice if they resort back to bestial form. That's like a huge no-no.
Right.
That's like a... look, we need to sacrifice ourselves because otherwise this is just too awful. Like this is,
this we need is to fight awful. Back in some catastrophic ways. And so this is our last resort.
This is it's a last resort. And it basically costs them everything to do something like that because it's such a bad thing.
Right. So this, if this is true, this plays into the fact that that actually really is a thing, which seems to really be a thing because it gets referenced a lot. And so, well, we'll get in, if you're not familiar with that, we'll get into it, more of that in the future, or go look up some of the Bosmer episodes that we've already done. And Ifra named them Bosmer. And from that moment, they were no longer in the same litter as the Khajiit. So basically took some of the Khajiit and turned them back into elves.
Yep. And you're out.
And maybe not back into elves, but into elves from whatever primordial. Yeah, into elves.
I guess they wouldn't be back into elves at the moment. It would just be into elves.
Right. And then the final paragraph says, and because Ifer had no appreciation for secrets, he shouted the first secret across all the heavens with his last breath so that all of Fatimai's children could cross the lattice. But Azura, in her wisdom, closed the ears of angry Anur and noisy Lorkaj, so they alone did not hear the word. So that justifies why Daedric princes can mess with stuff in Nirn. It justifies why Anu hasn't shown back up to destroy everything. It also implies that even though Lorkaj's heart was torn out and thrown out somewhere, Lorkaj is still around somewhere. And one of the beliefs of the Khajiit is that Lorkaj's body is the moon's and includes the third moon.
The third moon.
Or is the third moon, and the other two are still in some sort of reference to Lorkaj. There's also rumor that Lorkaj shows back up and is bound to Nirn and has to wander Nirn. So maybe there's all sorts of theories about that. Maybe Mike the Liar is Lorkaj.
Love that theory. That theory is so entertaining to me. Just forever wandering the phases, like
right.
Um, And I just really find it funny that they always just like refer to Lorcash as noisy Lorcash.
Noisy Lorcash. He's making noise. Yeah. Another theory is that the player is an avatar of Lorcan, of Lorcash, because you have the ability to affect the way everything plays out from your perspective. And there's even ties into this idea of like Shore, son of Shore in the Nordic myths about Shore, which was Lorcan, and his continued procession throughout time, even though he was destroyed and his heart was torn out and all of that, but yet still is bound and shows back up over time. So there's a lot of weirdness here that this kind of connects to in relation to the other stories that we've read and to other theories that are out there. But for the most part, it justifies the Khajiit and their place in the world and why they're important and what job they have and why they're there and why so many other races misunderstand them is because they are supposed to be secretive.
Yeah. You're not supposed to have all the information on them. That is part of who they are.
Right. Right. So there you go. This is the formative document. There are other documents that tie into this. There is one other book that is written by Clan Mother Anisi, and it was added in ESO just a few years back. And it actually plays on and expands a little bit of the details here, which we can cover in the future. And of course, there's other stuff too. I'm toying with the idea, do we go to the Red Guard Yakudin stuff next? Because it's super weird. Do we keep putting on the weird thing?
We got a lot more weirdness incoming. I hope you enjoy the fact that now things are getting a little less conventional.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It's going to be weird. And then there's also, the Bosmer perspective on things, which we can go back and review their perspective. We could talk about how the Nords are slightly different from everybody else. And then, of course, there's the Argonians and their perspective on everything. So, which is real different. And yet somehow all of these things fit together. So is it because there's commonalities, which are truth? Is it because there are commonalities because the cultures have just crossed over time and they started sharing the same stories? Or is it all just made up?
Yeah, I was going to say, is none of this real?
Is none of it real? Well, it seems like some of it must be real because the powerful beings
interact with some of like these creatures and apparitions and stuff. So, I mean, some of it is objectively real because it's like you literally play it in games. So,
But
to a degree,
in different games, sometimes it plays out in different ways. Sometimes it's hard to understand the motivations of these characters. Sometimes it seems like Anu's a good guy. And then this one, it's like, no, Anu's a bad guy because they wants to destroy Nerni. You get these conflicting versions. And we've talked about this before, too. If you play different games, sometimes what appears to be a good guy, powerful thing is now all of a sudden not a good guy, powerful thing. And, and the opposite. It's not cut and dry. And that's what makes it so cool. So there you go. That's the words of Clan Mother Anisi to her favorite daughter, the Khajiit origin of the world. Any other last thoughts on this one, Lotus?
A lot of Khajiit lore as it's been expounded upon, I have really enjoyed what they've added to it. Because I did like what was there, but it was limited up until recently. ESO has added a lot to it as of late, and kind of defined some of the stuff that was more so just alluded to in things like Morrowind and Oblivion and Skyrim and stuff like that. And I feel like a lot of it's been expanded on in unique and a lot of ways that I really like, dealing with all sorts of different aspects that they encounter. We had talked about, we've talked a lot about different aspects of it, but like between Dromothera and all sorts of stuff, so much of the series is fiction is based on other fiction and stuff like that, but I find their place in the Elder Scrolls is so unique. I love it. I think it's just, it's such a thing when you say Khajiit, this is like where you're thinking first. It's just like, no, this is such an Elder Scrolls thing specifically.
Oh, very much so. And the way that they play it as both silly, but also very serious at the same time.
Yes.
It's a very well-rounded, even though it started with like bits and pieces that have kind of congealed into something.
Yep.
They've done a good job of really fleshing it out and making it well-rounded and yet still mysterious.
Right, exactly. And I just, the weird ties in to astrology and astronomy and all this stuff, like as part of how they exist, is really cool too, just because it adds that. I always mention that I like low fantasy for the most part. I feel the higher fantasy aspects that tie into the Khajiit are some of the most fascinating ones, and I always actually do think that they add a lot to the series. I love the ties to the lunar lattice and stuff like that, where it's like, yeah, the moon cycles control what these things are born as and change into, and you have like weird transformations and stuff like that. It's just big fan of the Khajiit and their lore.
Yeah, very cool stuff. All right, well, that's going to do it for that stuff, but don't go anywhere. We have the best random page I think I've ever clicked on. It's sitting there waiting for me to read it. We also have a new voicemail, and we've got to thank our patrons. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
We're shipping Father's Day gifts with a rapid-fire round of questions. Ready?
Yes, my gift. Can you pack it?
Yep.
Ship it?
Yes.
Guarantee it?
Of course.
Oh, send a set of golf clubs.
Oh, hole in one.
Protect electronics? Dogproof it? Return it if they hate it?
Yes, no, and yeah.
Are you the UPS store?
Hey, we have a winner! Woo!
Visit theupsstore.com/guarantee for full details. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, prices, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. The UPS store. Visit a store today.
You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, dear child of Sithis. That is why the Night Mother loves you.
All right, here we are in the middle of the show. This is where we get to thank our patrons. And I mean, it's, I guess it's the end-ish part of the show. I used to do in the middle. I still say that, I guess, every time. Welcome to our newest patrons, Nick, Sarah P., Warper, Nicholas M., and Jason. Thank you for joining on patreon.com/ElderScrollsLorecast. We really do appreciate the support. You guys keep this going, and it means a lot. It means a ton. Also, we have to shout out our Daedric Princes, Blinding Vision, Hersine, Kira C., Mothman, and Peter R. Thank you for your continued support as well. If you'd like to get ad-free episodes, if you want to get stickers and t-shirts, or join us on our patron chats, all of that stuff on our Patreon page, go check it out. Lotus, this is our new voice message. And if you want to send us a voice message, you're welcome to do so. Try to keep it to under about 2 minutes if possible. And you can do that at voiceline.app/Elder Scrolls. Voiceline.app/Elder Scrolls. It's in our description if you need to just find the link and click on it. Here we go. I haven't listened to this yet, so we're doing it live. Here, this is from Thunder Goose.
In the beginning of the Fifth Age, in the land of Tamriel, Jigalag returned. He has defeated all of the Daedric princes, putting them in a weakened state. But a new force has arisen, for the Thunder Goose has awoken from his slumber. Jigalag sought to destroy Thunder Goose's Plane of Oblivion, the Pond. But with his clever wits and mastery of destruction, he has subjected Jigalag to an eternal torment, a constant shocking by a dragon-sized goose who can use the voice. With Jigalag imprisoned for another age, the people and geese roam free in the land of Tamriel for only one age.
That's amazing. The note alongside of that says, the lore of a new Daedra, one who is a master of lightning and geese.
Lightning and geese. Also, what I picture, even though it's not geese, when they mention a new age of geese on Tamriel, all I picture is if you've ever played The Legend of Zelda, and you hit the chickens too many times and they all just swarm the screen. And
yes.
Just like hundreds. Yeah. I just picture that with geese descending upon like Tamriel. That's just my immediate.
Yes.
We hadn't heard that beforehand, so I had no idea where the hell that was going.
I only read like the first sentence, and then I was like, I'm not going to read the rest of this.
Was pretty funny.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you so much, Thunder Goose. We'll have to incorporate you into the lore somehow and make it official, I guess, because we define what's official.
Right, clearly.
Clearly, we do. But thank you so much. And just a reminder, if you want to leave us a voicemail, please do so.
They don't have to be serious. Yeah. They can be goofy like that, which is very entertaining.
Yeah. So voiceline.app/Elder Scrolls if you want to do that. And then we've got just a few more things. We've got our random page. But before that, just a reminder, if you'd like to help us out in other ways, you can leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. We'll read it out on a future episode if it's from the US. But if you're from other places, it's still super helpful. I just can't see all the reviews. So thank you to everyone who has taken the time to do that in the past. And heck, We don't have any new ones this week, which means if you leave one this week, we'll probably read yours next week. So drop us a little note in there. Let people know why they should tune into the show. All right. So are you ready for the random page?
I am.
All right.
I actually I don't know what you clicked on this time in advance. So
I clicked on the random page button.
Well, that's what true. I clicked on. I guess I do know what you physically right. clicked on the page, but I don't know what was the result this time.
Yeah. So just so everybody knows, like we mentioned, we've been doing this for a long time now, but if you go to the unofficial Elder Scrolls pages, UESP.net, and you look on the left side of the page, you know, there's a little bar with all the little links, different parts to go find different things. There's help, how to contribute, recent changes, and then random page. It's the fourth link down the left side. So if you want to try this out for yourself, go click that and just see what comes up. All right.
Make your very own random page.
Make your own random page. Just do it every day. Every day, give yourself a random page and see what happens. What happened today is we got this one. It's categorized as lore, colon, and it's technically in the appendices section of the lore. The title of this page is lore, colon, prostitution.
Beautiful. Love this. So I believe it. One of these, I believe, got one of my videos taken off YouTube.
Oh, no. I hope this one doesn't get us taken off YouTube. What will we do? most of our listeners are on audio. If you do watch this on YouTube, thank you for being here. But just
yeah,
so you,
no,
just
super
so you know,
appreciate it. But yeah,
it's a small percentage of our total audience.
I think it was because I went away for a minute and it was an awkward scene in Daggerfall or something like that. Right.
Oh man. All right. So,
So it prostitution
describes,
great. Let's go with this. I mean, it's part of the series.
Yeah. It's a long page. We're not gonna be able to read the whole thing, but at the top describes what that actually is. it includes, terms for the people who work this career, including things like,
I was gonna say, isn't this partly a guild? Hold on.
It's not saying anything about a guild here. Although
go on.
There is reference to like Daggerfall actually has prostitutes in it for sure.
Yes. That's definitely what caused my problem with that video being removed.
Yeah. That's absolutely a thing. And then some of the other games reference them, or they have people who. It's clear that that's their job, but it's kind of innuendo. It mentions terms for people who work this career, including Nightflower, Strumpet, Lady of the Night. Strumpet is always, it sounds like trumpet, but okay. Then it goes on and talks about the organization of them and how they work in different places and how there is a prostitutes guild. This was in, this must have been Daggerfall.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. I was like, I'm pretty sure that in one of the older games, I'm assuming Daggerfall, there was a prostitution guild. Okay, mm-hmm. That's fine. I just wasn't sure if I was losing it or if that was real.
Yep. And it has a list of known brothels. And then we get a bunch of pictures at the bottom of, a Breton prostitute, a Redguard prostitute, a Breton prostitute and dancer in Morrowind. You've got a Redguard and a Nord prostitute. Those are in Morrowind. And then you do have a Breton prostitute and brothel owner in Oblivion. I didn't remember that. That's cool. And then a secretive Nord prostitute in Skyrim. That's where things start getting secretive. A little bit more PG. So they start trying to like imply things without saying it so much.
Yeah. And certainly not a case from the games from the 90s.
Yeah. But they show up in ESO also. Dunmer,
I was going to say, it's ESO definitely has its fair share.
Yeah. And then also a Nord morale officer. That's another title.
Morale officer.
There you go.
Beautiful.
There you go. And a dark seducer from a harem. So that's fun.
That's fun.
Dark seducers get in on this too, I guess. I guess it's in their name, right? Like that makes sense. So there you go. There's a whole page dedicated to all of that. If you are curious, you can go check that out. So...
That was definitely up there in terms of a random page.
Yeah. So sometimes it's just like, here's some code from a mod, but this time we got a whole spicy.
Yeah. Entry. We got a spicy one this week.
Spicy one. All right. Well, that's going to do for this episode. Do you have anything else you want to share before we head out?
No, not really. Just been busy. We had an episode of Tales. I believe it was last week. I don't know what is time anymore. We got another one on the horizon. We just got to figure out a time where we can coordinate us to record. If you enjoy my other show where it's more of a roundtable discussion about Elder Scrolls related things and, you know, big fan of the UESP as they are our official sponsor. sponsor over there as well. You can check out Tales of Tamriel. Other than that, I just kind of been trying to find myself some game time so that I can play some of the series. I've still been loving Oblivion.
Yeah, yeah.
I got its first patch, actually, today.
It did. It did. ESO had a big update for PC.
Yes.
And
I'm very excited for a console, but I don't have it yet.
Yeah, I gave my Nightblade a laser beam. He shoots a green laser beam. It feels weird because I'm like, you know, stabby, stabby, shoot my bow. And then I'm like, laser beam.
Yeah. Now you're stabby, stabby, shoot your lasers.
Yeah. So it works. So why not? Right. So, yeah, I'll probably keep messing with that. But yeah, I've got that going on. I've got GCX 2025 in Orlando, Florida is July 25th and 26th. I'm planning
to be there. Wish I could go.
Yep. There's going to be all sorts of cool stuff, including a life-size Oblivion gate, which hopefully if I enter it, I will find my way back out.
Just take a sigil stone with you.
Okay. I've got plenty of those sitting around in the corner.
Just make sure that you have not crap enchantments on them.
Oh, crap.
All right. A quick save right before you take it. Okay. Make sure you roll a good one.
Okay, will do, will do. But I'm going to that. If you'd like to come down to Florida, have a vacation in Orlando, go to GCX, meet a bunch of cool people from the video game industry, voice actors, streamers, myself, content creators, all sorts of different people. Come on down. Come join us. We'll be sharing some stuff in the Discord about what's going on and where I might be for like meet and greets and kind of hanging out. Maybe we'll all get dinner together. I don't know. We'll figure it out as we go. But that's what's coming up on the 25th and 26th of July. So just a few weeks away, a little over a month. And other than that, we've got new shows joining the network. There's all sorts of fun stuff. If you'd like to start your own podcast, come join us. We have the Rocket Club as part of Robots Radio for that reason. I will help mentor you and get your show started and give you all the things you need in order to make sure that everything does what you need it to do in order to be as successful as possible. So we got that going on, robotsradio.net. Lots of other shows on the network. Lots of my other shows. Lotus's other shows. Lots of fun things. Go check it all out. And thank you for being here. Chat, thanks for joining us. Hercene says, spicy page. Someone had fun writing that page. Absolutely. So thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll see you next time. We'll be back with some more lore stuff. And then we're going to be getting 2 weeks from now to our patron chat. So that's coming up as well. So look forward to that and have a wonderful rest of your week. We'll see you next time.
Appreciate y'all.
Thanks for tuning in to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Check out robotsradio.net for more podcasts just like this, and join us on the Robots Radio Discord. Be part of a community of over 5,000 people who are excited about video games and so much more. Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
Don't you deserve a Medicare plan you can count on? Well, you can count on a Medicare Advantage plan from United Healthcare. Enjoy reliable coverage and low out-of-pocket costs with a Medicare Advantage plan from United Healthcare. And if you have a chronic condition like diabetes, chronic heart failure, or a cardiovascular disorder, you may qualify for a United Healthcare Complete Care plan with plans that fit your life today and as your needs change tomorrow. Find out more about United Healthcare plans at uhc.com/Medicare.